Welcome back again on Metal Life. This is Ivantina. I'm today with Christina Cogdell. Did I pronounce it well?
Correctly.
Morning, Christina. Can you please just briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm a professor of design, actually design history, at the University of California at Davis.
Yeah.
I've written a book on the history of eugenics and design, and I do research now on contemporary generative architecture. I'm very interested in how theories and practices from the sciences make their way into architecture and design.
So yeah, so first, you define yourself as a techno-pessimist. Right?
So, well, in the language of this conference, yes.
Yes. So you have a quite extensive knowledge of the story of eugenics and eugenics issues. So can you just please come back on that, and what are the reasons that makes you pessimist actually about the use of synthetic biology and such?
Okay. So in saying techno-pessimist, I'm referring to technologies in general. So I don't buy the notion of techno-fixes. I think technologies have huge costs. I think they've transformed our environment to the worst. I think they drive capitalist economies, technology does. So I'm a techno-pessimist in that sense. I really love low-tech, low-energy things. I like making things by hand, personally. Yeah. So, so that's the techno-pessimism part. I'm not looking for new technologies to save the world. I actually think that kind of rhetoric is very misleading, and prefer to put my energies into thinking critically about technologies and finding other ways to, quote-unquote, save the world.
And what's the links between eugenism, eugenics,
and technology,
and today's synthetic?
Well, so one of the main themes that I pursued in my first book, which is called Eugenic Design, I looked at the ways in which designers and eugenicists were following this parallel design goals for human bodies and for products.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's been pointed out in terms of the Holocaust by other historians in Germany is the kind of technocratic logic by which humans become products that are therefore then disposable. So there is a different ethics, perhaps, that we place on products than we place on human bodies. Although, of course, in the past, with slavery, with other uses, there's this degradation of human beings that continually persists through human history. So I question many of those things, and I find that the you part in eugenics, the EU, the sense of something being good or designed well or having good genes, there is so many questions that are problematic about who decides what is good, what is fitness, who's choosing to optimize fitness. Perhaps that is not a good choice in the overall picture of natural selection. It's with a very vast shortage of knowledge. And then there's issues of ownership and control and who's telling who what a good gene is, et cetera. So there's so many problems, but technology and the notion that we can control it is really tied into the notion of eugenics. There's this sense of, the way I define eugenics is controlling or designing evolution. Because you're not usually going to design something to make it, quote-unquote, worse, as far as a human is concerned. So the you is already built into the assumption of the design.
That's why this notion is still relevant in the field of synthetic biology today.
Absolutely, because you're designing cells or bacteria or whatever it is that you are working with. You're putting in qualities that you believe need to be there for some reason, whether it's to so-called enhance or improve. That language is used particularly in talking about human designing humans in the future. But it's also this sense of designing for a particular end or making it into a product. So it's something living that's becoming a product that then enters into the capitalist economy.
So in the presentation, Aaron Katzmann make a joke and says that you became a techno-utopist.
Yes.
Now, so in your presentation, you you emphasize on two main reasons why you're now in favor of the development of synthetic biology. One is gene transfer.
Correction. I'm not in favor of the development of synthetic biology.
I mean, that was the title of your slide.
Perhaps in part. Okay. It's partial. It's in a laboratory. I have, and it's a question too.
Oh, okay.
So I'm in the process of shaping my views, and I've been working on one project with a synthetic biologist at my university to try to better understand what the processes are, what the costs are, what the potentials are. So I'm really in a quandary or in a transition of thinking about all of what I used to think about synthetic biology. Being open up for re-examination, not from a just kind of a blank, oh, it's ethically wrong point of view, but rather, as I said, can I say a bad word on this blog? You know, we're so...
Okay, so...
F-U-C-K-E-D, that what else do you do at this point? So it's like, what are the lesser of evils, and how do we mitigate environmental damage in the world and field of design?
So
I'm curious about what the possibilities are.
Okay, so anyway, the two main reasons anyway that you gave was, on the one side, gene transfer.
Gene transfer.
And on the other side, the history of technology in general.
In relation to energy.
In relation to energy. Can you just unpack those two notions for people that didn't attend?
Sure. So, after the Human Genome Project, and perhaps before, there's been knowledge of bacteria and microorganisms that they readily swap genes with each other. So one of the things that this makes me think of, before I knew about horizontal gene transfer, there seemed to be something inviolate about messing with vertical descent, so that there was something already, you know, clearly unnatural with synthetic biology or genetic engineering, because you're intervening in a way that was not ever part of evolution. However, with the discovery that there is lateral gene transfer, and even in human DNA we have viruses and bacteria and plant DNA, I have bigger questions about what a species is, what does it mean, and in some ways it seems less unnatural. Now, does it matter that it's less natural? Does something being natural justify that it's okay for human technology and business to make use of?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. But there is something that was just kind of a internal gut feeling that was violating some like natural law.
Yeah.
And now that we know that in nature it happens, it doesn't seem so inviolate. That's all. But that still opens all kinds of questions about, does that mean we do it? And at what scale do we do it? And when and why and how?
I think in the keynote this morning, we had this presentation about non-Western perception of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman was talking about the Aborigine perception and definition of life, and this notion of dreamings. And basically, one of the questions that arose in the discussion was, how do those people, indigenous or aborigine, perceive modification of the gene? And her answer was, if I remember correctly, that it would be like a rupture in the story.
Yeah, you'd be interfering in the story, exactly. Changing the story. I was surprised at her answer.
You will disagree with her.
I don't know if I disagree or not, because I don't share. I haven't been raised with her worldview.
Yeah.
But the sense that she assumes a story, I don't know if in her aboriginal worldview, the story is something that is, like, I'm unclear what the human role is in the stories, because one of the questions in another panel was, critiqued aboriginal worldview and said, actually, it's very anthropocentric. If a place can't exist without a human being caring for it, you know, what do we do with the anthropocentrism in a worldview? And that was an offensive question, actually, and was stepped back from and said, you know, you're imposing your Western view of anthropocentrism onto my Aboriginal worldview, so I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah.
But so, being outside of that, for me, it's hard for me to... I was surprised at her answer, in other words. And I don't know if she's aware of lateral gene transfer, or even if that matters. It sounds like, in some ways, science is a bit outside, science as people in the West might think of it. It's relevant, but perhaps not the most important way to view the world. from the way she was describing it.
And the other side of your...
the other point as to what's changing my views and making me ask about the potentials of synthetic biology, is it worth pursuing?
Was about the history of technology itself.
The history of technology in relation to the history of energy. Okay. So basically, once I've started, I'm teaching a class called Energy, Materials, and Design Across Time. And it starts in 30,000 BC and it comes to the present. And basically, the first, that we teach a 10-week quarter. So the first 5 to 6 weeks, there is very little change over thousands and thousands of years, you know, 20,000 years, up to 1780, basically, or something like that.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the continuity of technologies, of what kinds of power was being used, animal, wind, water, renewable sources of power for the most part, the scale at which things happened, as well as the scale of world population, was constant almost across those thousands of years. And now, since the discovery of fossil fuels, there's been this exponential hockey puck, if you graph it, shoot up into the atmosphere, into huge world population, world GDP, and the profits that have come out of the exploitation of that energy, which is, by the way, it's like a natural energy source, right? But it's time built into it. And what we're doing is taking that time and the compression of that energy and that time and just burning it in 200 years. And it's also caused, you know, the exponential shoot in global warming, in CO2 and greenhouse gases. So I've started to look at the similarity in this hockey puck exponential change that's happened since the discovery of fossil fuels. And then built into that is also per capita use of energy, which has escalated, especially in developed countries. So this pursuit of a Western standard of living by many peoples in the world, it's absolutely untenable for what our world has. So I've kind of reached, my students either kind of leave that class, and I do too, with this feudalistic, like, oh my God, there's nothing we can do to stop, it's already so screwed up. Okay. Or they take it as a challenge and they're like, game on, what are we going to do to try to fix this? And so my pursuit of synthetic biology, perhaps, might be tied into that question of, does it offer enough beneficial biological and environmental effects to be worth pursuing? And it may not. I'm still learning a ton. I think Oren's comment that, you know, why would you make cellulose in a lab when there's already so much cellulose sitting around in the fields that we don't even just make use of it? He's like, it's a ridiculous pursuit.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with him. I'm thankful for his comment, you know? So it's like, what is it in the synthetic realm that is useful for in the laboratory? I don't know the answer yet. I think it's still a very young technology, but I have no doubt that bio design, not necessarily synthetic biology
that
design.
That would be my last question.
Yeah.
The
difference?
The difference. What is the difference between synbio design
and
bio design?
Well, I don't know that it's been published anywhere. So the way I use those words to describe it, I think about when any kind of human being from times past, perhaps Aboriginal times to today, when we make something out of a non-synthetic material, kind of a biological material like wood or plants or, you know, dye that you make from plants, something that is kind of natural as opposed to chemically processed in a factory or a laboratory, that would be bio design. So it's biologically based design in terms of natural materials.
Yeah.
The synthetic part, the synbio design, S-Y-N, refers
technology.
To synthetic biology per se.
Okay.
So actually doing genetic engineering on quote-unquote natural materials to make them so-called better for what our economy needs for them. So as I was saying in there, I have a quandary as someone who's critical of eugenics, this notion of improvement, but yet someone who teaches budding designers who are going out to try to affect what kinds of products we have available in our world and designing buildings, etc. I feel like there's a need to shift to bio-based materials, undoubtedly, and there might at some point be a need to use synthetic biology, but I don't know yet.
Okay, thank you. I think this will be our closing comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.